We're going to do something a little bit different than we've done before. We've talked about the fact that we were going to share some of our core values and our purpose, and now is the time that we'll do that. There's nothing really super special, we'll say, about New Year's, but a lot of times it gets us thinking about, you know, the year to come, reflecting on previous years, and really does give us just kind of a nice little way to kind of examine things a little bit. And the leadership here has been for many months now trying to craft our purpose statement and then some core values that flow out of that purpose statement. And then we'll also share with you the vision that we want to cast based on those core values which come out of that purpose. So all that to say, this morning's sermon is going to be a little different than what we're used to. Normally, we open our Bibles and we really dig down and look at a particular text in great depth. And we're certainly going to use the Bible, and we're certainly going to do that. But what I want you to kind of look at this as, really, this month is kind of going to be one giant sermon, okay? And so this morning's sermon is really kind of like the introduction, all right? So normally you will have a proposition, and that'll be one big idea, and then from that in a sermon you will have different points that will support that big idea, and then either woven throughout the whole message or oftentimes included on the end of the message, you will have some points of application, okay? So if we're going to look at this month-long series, kind of look at it like that. So this morning, this is really just the introduction. This is the proposition, or as we put it here, the purpose. And I want you to notice these two. These are actually going to be on display in different parts of the church. We'll have one that's larger that will have our purpose statement on it, and then we'll have our different core values, and they too will be hung different places in the church. What this is designed to do is really get us as a church to really focus on what we are about as a church. Now, there are lots of things that are biblical that we could have included in these core values and in this purpose statement, but what we tried to do was, on the one hand, figure out where we want to go, but also what are we doing well? What are we about? What is Grace Bible Church about? Because we're going to look a little bit different than maybe another church that has a very similar theology, right? We want to figure out what our unique little niche is, and so we've spent a long time trying to come up with this and craft this. And one of the other things that this could do is really unite us for the cause of Christ, and really it'll help us to serve sort of as a rallying cry, right? I mean, this is what we're about, and this is who we are, and this is what we're doing. So again, it wouldn't be super effective if we had 10,000 core values. I mean, who's going to remember that? You know, not a big deal. So we tried to limit it. Yes, there are some things that we could have included. There are some that are broad enough to include multiple things. But as we worked at trying to really distill this and crystallize this, this is what we're about. And one of the nice things about this too is it's going to, you know, we're trying to be honest as a church and say, this is who we are. This is what we're about. So hopefully people can say, wow, I'm about that too. And we could come along, come together, and be united for one purpose, right? So it also will serve this way. Now, please listen to me carefully, okay? If you hear me say this, this is what we're about, you don't like it, hit the road, then that's not exactly what I'm saying, okay? Yes, there's a sliver of truth to that, but I want you to understand the reality is We want to be open and honest. This is who we are. This is what we're about. And if for some reason that's not what you're about and you want to like change us or reform us, you'd probably be better served somewhere else, okay? Now that being said, we want you here. We want to grow with you. We want to be encouraged by you and encourage you. We want to serve God and be in awe of God together. We desire that. But if this isn't something that you know that you can agree to be a part of, we get it. You know, you can be a part of something else. That's okay. The one thing I do ask, though, please listen to all of the different core values before you make a judgment like that. I mean, make sure you really have a good understanding what we're presenting and what we're about as a church. Don't leave after today and say, "Well, those guys are, you know, all about, you know, being in awe of God, and I just can't get behind that." You know, let's look at all of it. You know, I mean, month long, let's look at it. And if after that time, you know, that's not for you, well, that's up to you. Okay, but this can really serve to unite us, really serve to clarify what we're about so that we can be more effective for the cause of Christ. So again, if we're looking at this series like a sermon, today is the introduction and really the proposition or the big idea. And then we're going to have four core values or four points that are going to give detail to that main point. And then we're going to have our vision, which is the application. Okay, what are we going to do based on what and who we're about, okay? Now the vision, I'll tell you this, the vision, we're gonna I don't want to say it has a shelf life because it kind of doesn't, but the reality is, since it's the outworking or the application, we're gonna kind of set some goals in our vision, and then hopefully we're gonna meet those goals. So every, we haven't decided if it'll be every couple of years or every year, but the vision could, you know, change and probably will change a little bit year after year. But the purpose and the core values, those are going to stay the same, okay? So just give you kind of an idea what we're about. And wouldn't you like to know? Hopefully the name Grace Bible Church tells you a little something about who we are and what we're about, right? But we want to define that. You know, we want to make it simple enough that everybody can say, you know what, at Grace Bible Church, this is what we're about. And so hopefully you're excited. And hopefully this won't be new to you entirely. It'll be organized perhaps a little bit differently, but we're not coming up with new stuff. We're just trying to clarify who we are, what we're about. So are you ready to hear what our purpose is? Let's look at it. We'll read it together. And then every week we'll have the new core value up where this is, and then these will find a place in different parts of the church. But it says there, as you can see, we lovingly equip believers to live in awe of God and build up his church. And then we have two Bible verses that support that. And we can have a whole list of other Bible verses that would support that as well. But these are two that we picked. Because again, if we're going to give you some big deal and then only have one obscure verse to prove that big deal, we might not be right in that regard. So again, this is big enough that there's all kinds of Bible verses we could bring into this. A few things I want you to notice, though. It says we lovingly, right? We lovingly, we're not out on the streets with megaphones, you know, screaming to everybody saying that you must be in awe of God or you're all going to hell. That wouldn't be lovingly. Now don't take it too far and say, well, lovingly means, you know, you can't confront sin. Well, certainly you can. The Bible tells us to. If we see a brother or sister in sin, we lovingly confront them. So we do share the truth, and we do confront when necessary, but we do so in a loving manner. And so it is with this too. We lovingly equip. We want to equip people to do this. And who is it? Believers. Certainly we want everybody to be in awe of God, but primarily when we come here and we gather together, we're about taking, you know, believers and bringing them into the presence of God so they can be in awe of him. And then certainly building up his church. Just one little disclaimer there. I want you to understand, we're not saying that we somehow are building the church. Okay? Matthew chapter 16 is one of the places that, well, it's the best place to go to find Jesus talking to Peter, you know, and Jesus says, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. So make no mistake about it. Jesus is building his church, but he uses people to do that. I mean, he gave the church the gift of pastors and teachers and evangelists, as we would see if we turn to Ephesians 4. We would see that. So we want to be yielded to God and be in awe of him and serve him the way we're supposed to, so that his church will be built up by him through that means. Okay? So just kind of a rough sketch. But let's dig in. Hopefully you're ready. Let's do this, okay? Let's ask the Lord to bless our time this morning and to clarify our vision so that we can more precisely serve him with effectiveness. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for your goodness. Thank you for this church of yours. Thank you, Lord, that you are building the church, and even the gates of hell will not prevail against it, Lord. You are doing it, and it will last. But thank you that you allow us to take part in it, Lord. This is so exciting, and you're so good to us, Lord. And we do seek to be good stewards of all that you've entrusted to our care, Lord. Help us to be an effective church that wants to see people transformed and standing in awe of you, Lord, and being part of the body. We're excited, Lord, to see what you have for us. Bless our time together. In Jesus' name, amen. So, last year, well, I say last year, that was a couple days ago. Let me, not this last October, but the October before that, Debbie and I, we were celebrating our anniversary a little bit early. And one of the things that we did was we went to the Grand Canyon. And I don't know if you've ever been to the Grand Canyon, but let me tell you this. It's probably one of the most, if not the most photographed place in the world. Pictures just don't really do it justice. There's some beautiful pictures, beautiful sunsets. I mean, there's some wonderful images of the Grand Canyon, but until you stand at the edge of the Grand Canyon and experience it, you don't fully appreciate the magnitude of it. You know, how big it is, how long and how wide and the depth. I mean, it is stunning. As a young man, I had the experience of seeing the Grand Canyon, and it really made a lasting impression on me. My wife had never been. We wanted to do that together, and she was overwhelmed with this beauty of the Grand Canyon. So this last October, we wanted our boys to experience that. We showed them pictures. We explained it to them the best we can, but we finally show up, and if you've ever been there, you know, there's big parking lot, visitor center. You generally, I mean, you can drive around, but you park your car and they have a free bus that'll take you to all these different places. And so we hop on one of the buses and we go to the first place. And again, the boys saw pictures of it. We explained it to them best we could. They walked out of the bus. And of course, Elijah, and you can probably picture this, those of you that know him, you know, just wide-eyed, you know, just taking it in, not really saying much, just like, whoa. And then Isaiah steps out and he says, oh, this is extraordinary. And you know, it was watching them stand in awe of this thing that we call the Grand Canyon actually helped me to appreciate it even more. help me remember when I first saw it and the awe that it inspired then and that it still does. And I actually also got to watch some of the other people that were around us, and it caused them to smile to see the reaction of my two young boys as they saw the Grand Canyon. As wonderful and as beautiful as the Grand Canyon is, I want to tell you, God is awe-inspiring. God created us as creatures that are in awe. I mean, think about it. Just think of the things that occupy us, right? I mean, we are constantly, like, you know, drawn into, like, extraordinary stuff, right? I mean, maybe before COVID, you'd have to go back a little bit, but like going to the movie theater, right? I mean, we want some big blockbuster extreme, like, wow, some extraordinary thing. We're tied into that. We're sucked into it, right? We're drawn to those sorts of things. You know, even up here in northern Utah, you know, when there's a big Powerball jackpot, a lot of people will head over the border to Idaho and get their Powerball tickets because they're thinking, man, 400 and whatever, 400 and let's say $76 million. I mean, that's pretty extraordinary. That's pretty magnificent. People are sucked into that. They're captivated by that. They're drawn into that kind of thing, you know? And even creation does that. It draws us in. I mean, there are many people, a lot of unsaved people, that make it their life to study the stars, and scientists who study microbiology, and we are really captivated by these things that are extraordinary. God made us that way. God made us to be in awe, and I would say that we are all in awe of something. But the question is, what is it that captivates us? What is it that we're in awe of? Because all those things that I listed, they can't satisfy that longing that God put in us. Only He can do that. I mean, think about it. Have you ever heard of the documentaries where they go and they follow the people who have won lottery jackpots? Inevitably, I won't say every time, but most of the times it ruins their lives, right? And you're like, well, it's a chance I'd like to take, right? But what happens is they get this thing that they're captivated by, that they're engrossed in, only to find out it doesn't satisfy. I mean, all the other things that we're in awe over, they don't satisfy, maybe temporarily, but there's no lasting satisfaction in these things. God created us to be in awe, but the only way that sense of awe can really satisfy, really be fulfilled, is when we're in awe of Him. Remember back in the old days? I haven't seen this lately. I mean, I see it in different ways, but back in the old days, you'd go to the doctor's office and there'd be a jar sitting on the desk somewhere, right? Full of, here's the fancy term, right? You know, tongue depressors. That sounds kind of neat, but we all know they're just giant popsicle sticks, right? And the idea is that the doctor would put that tongue depressor or that big popsicle stick in your mouth and push your tongue down and have you say, ah, right? And you can even kind of feel it when you say, ah, ah. It kind of like relaxes the muscles. What the idea is, tongue goes down, you say, ah, and the doctor can look into your mouth, look into your body, and assess certain things about your health based on what he can see in your mouth. So I want to tell you similarly, you know, you can say awe, and what you say awe to will give a little glimpse into your soul. What are you passionate about? What excites you? What do you say awe about? Now, I'm not saying that some of these things aren't justifiably awe-inspiring. You know, I think God's creation is awe-inspiring, but it should be a finger pointing us to the awesomeness of God, right? But what, just like the doctor telling you to say awe so he can see and determine something about your health, so our awe and what we say awe about says something about us. And so really, you'll see this is kind of a two-part purpose. So do you guys ever mess around with like Google Earth? It's kind of fun. I assume they still have it. But you can take like a satellite image of a particular place. You could see the street. You could even see cars on the street, people and buildings. And then you zoom out a little bit and you can kind of see the city. And a little bit more, and you can see maybe the state, and more, you can see the country, and even keep going until you see this globe, this sphere that we call the earth, right? Well, that's kind of what we're doing here this morning. We're zooming way out, and we're trying to see the big picture. What is the big picture that we're going to zoom into a little bit more as these sermons progress? The big picture is the awe of God. We want to lovingly equip believers to live in awe of God and to build up his church. So you have this twofold aspect. In fact, to put it another way, somebody once asked Jesus what the greatest commandment was, right? And Jesus basically said that the greatest commandment was to love God, right? Love God with your heart, soul, mind, strength. Love God. And the other is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. And so again, we want to look at both of those elements. God, and then how, because of God, how we ought to relate to one another. So to put it this way, I personally, and hopefully this is your desire as well, I personally want to make it my purpose to live in the awe of God and bring others to see the awe of God and to live in the awe of God so that they then can bring other people into the awe of God. Now, the awe of God, that's one way to put it. We were very deliberate about the wording. Some people might use the word glorify, and that's a good word, but sometimes we don't quite understand what that means. You know, glorify God. I kind of think I know what they're talking about. Or worship God, right? Worship's another great word. Worship God. You know, as Ben mentioned even this morning, when we come together, we don't have like part of our service as the worship service. We didn't want to use that word worship because for so many people, worship means singing, which it includes that, but that doesn't mean that's not all that worship is. Everything we do here should be worship. I mean, we should be worshiping when we're digging into God's word, being prepared and equipped to go out and do what his word says. That is worship. When we're praying to God, that is worship. When we're singing praises to God, certainly that is worship. So we could have used the word glory. We could have used the word worship, fine words, but we deliberately chose awe because that kind of, you know, it's not so familiar that we just kind of gloss over it. But it's kind of like the wow factor, right? God is not boring. Can you agree? I want to say, I think that we can draw back to any problem that we're facing, any struggle with sin, any heartache, any problem or trouble that we're facing, I think can go back to an awe of God problem. And I know that sounds a little maybe simplistic, But I think you'll see how it's true. I mean, God is in control, and he either makes things happen or allows them to happen, but he is in control. He has a plan and a purpose, and he is good. And so if we're getting carried away in some direction that takes us away from God, we've got an awe problem. So let me share with you. And again, the passages there. Well, let's turn to Psalm 33:8. I'll give you a second to get there. We're going to look at this one. And again, we could have went to many, many places in the Bible. This is just one of many we could have gone to. But in this psalm of praise, it says this, Psalm 33:8, let all the earth fear the Lord. And again, that gives us a little clue into this idea, right? This fear, this reverence, right? Like, you know, these people that think they're just going to, you know, on judgment day, they're going to get up there and give God the what for, and I deserve this and I deserve that, and, you know, whatever. It doesn't work that way. You're not talking about the right God. You're not seeing him correctly, right? But this idea of fear and reverence and falling down before him. I mean, it says, let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. Are you in awe of this God? Can you say, wow, he's extraordinary? Because if you can't, if you're not in awe of God, you're not seeing him right. You're not seeing him correctly. You're not seeing him as portrayed in his word. So that really gives the foundation of this idea in our purpose statement. Ephesians 4, 11 to 16 there really kind of gives the nuts and bolts of it. And that's going to be unfolded as we look at the core values. So we're not going to spend a lot of time there this morning. But again, the big idea is we want to be in awe of God so that we can bring other people into the awe of God so they in turn can bring others into the awe of God. So we want to be equipping people to do that. We ourselves want to be about that so that we can draw others into that same awe so they can bring others into that awe. Let's think of just a handful of God's attributes. Think of the love of God. Are you in awe when you think about the love of God? Think about this for a minute. What king, and again, we just celebrated the Christmas season, okay? So this is still hopefully fresh in our thinking. But what king would step down from his throne for me? Who does that? I mean, you might say that's nuts, that's crazy. But that's not it. You know, Jesus didn't just step down from some earthly throne. He is God, right? I mean, he's part of the what we call the Trinity, the Godhead. The Father, the Son, and the Spirit are all this one God that the Bible presents for us, right? And so God stepped down, and he didn't just step down by becoming a man, though that was, I mean, that's just unheard of by itself. He became a servant. He didn't come and be average with everybody. He put himself below everybody. Remember the night, I mean, Jesus was facing the cross. The disciples were arguing about who the greatest in the kingdom was. And then Matthew's gospel tells us that it was that time Jesus, he tied a towel around his waist and got some water in a basin, and he began to wash the feet of the disciples, something that only the lowest servant would do. And Jesus said, hey, you saw me do this to you. You guys should do this to one another. So what kind of a God steps down from his throne while never ceasing to be God? He is, was, always will be God, but he stepped down from his throne, stepped into humanity, and became a servant for me. That is so over the top. I mean, this never gets old. I've been a Christian now going on probably getting close to like 30 years, you know, and I've heard the gospel preached different ways, different times, and it never gets old. I love it. I can't get enough of it. I mean, how can that be? What kind of a God, what kind of love must that be? It is so over the top. So not only did he step down from his throne and become a man, and not just an ordinary man, but a servant. He put himself below. The king became a servant. and he lived a perfect life under the law, proving that he is God, because only God can do that. And just when you think it can't get any more over the top than that, you realize he died for me. Who would do that? I mean, that's nuts. Nobody does that. I can't think of anybody that would do that. Only one. And he did it for me, and he did it for anybody who would trust him and respond in faith. I mean, that is some crazy kind of love. How can you not stand in awe of a God like that? I mean, you're speechless. I mean, he's like, whoa. And then he rose 3 days later, just like he said he would, proving that he knew what he was talking about, proving that he paid a sufficient price, or he'd still be paying for it, and the wages of sin is death. But he rose 3 days later, proving that he did it. He accomplished it. I mean, who does that? Are you in awe of this God? This God that we learn about in his word, this God that we are so eager here at Grace Bible Church to take people by the hand and bring them into the presence of God. I want to live in the awe of God so I can bring other people into the awe of God, so they, when they are in awe of God, they will go and bring others into the awe of God, because this God is unlike anything the world has to offer. We have this longing to be in awe, but all these things that we turn to just don't satisfy. Only God satisfies that longing. Think about God's justice. If you were to have, I'm sorry, my throat is just a little sticky. If you were to have what we would consider to be a good judge, he would still get it wrong once in a while, wouldn't he? I mean, think about it. On the one hand, he doesn't have all the information. You know, sometimes there are smooth-talking lawyers that would like to... thank you so much. Appreciate it. Sometimes there are smooth-talking lawyers that want to hide the truth or manipulate the truth or twist the truth. And so a judge, even though he wants to, even though he's trying to, sometimes he can't judge perfectly. I mean, and even if he has a pretty good track record, if he's been making judgments for a long time, I mean, even if he has a 99% track record, he still gets it wrong. And that's expected. And we'd still consider that to be a pretty good judge. You know, in law, there's this principle that says if somebody who is in judgment, somebody that's presiding over a case, is a little too close to home as far as that case is concerned, they have to, kind of a fancy word, recuse themselves, which means they understand, because they're human, they have bias, right? We all have bias, whether we know it or not, whether we like it or not, we all have bias. And if the judge is presiding over a case that's too close to home, he has to recuse himself because he wouldn't be able to judge fairly. So even if he wanted to, it's not within him to perfectly judge fairly all the time. I mean, think about it, right? I mean, can you imagine if you were a judge and you were to sit over a trial that involved one of your adult children for some crazy offense like murder or something? I mean, like, you wouldn't be able to rightly and fairly rule because it's just a little bit too close to home. I mean, it would be really, really hard to always get it right all the time. But let me tell you, our God, who is eternal, and I mean, that right there, if you're not in awe about the eternality of God, I mean, try to think of forever in the past and forever in the future. I mean, how do you wrap your mind around that? That is the God of the Bible. He is eternal. So he's been doing this for a long time, and he has a perfect, perfect record. And this is close to home. We are his creation. The sin, the offense, the violation is against him. And yet, he can rule fairly, justly, perfectly all the time, every time, does that not just make you think, wow? I mean, are you not in awe over the love of God and over the justice of God? What about the mercy of God? I mean, that's where, I mean, this is pretty cool because, you know, God being a holy and just God, you know, he can't overlook sin. He can't go soft on it. He can't say, well, I really, really like you, so I'm going to make an exception. No, because he can't do that, because it's not within his nature. It's not within his character. He is right and just all the time, every time. And so how do you have the meeting of this love of God? God is love, absolutely. But he's also a just judge. And he has to punish sin. The righteous demands of the law must be met. But it's within the mercy of God that we can have a substitute. It's within the mercy of God that his wrath is satisfied. And yet his love doesn't go violated. And yet we can experience a right relationship with him. I mean, that's overwhelming. I can't get over it. Think about the fact that he's the creator. I mean, as we're making different advances in technology, we have the ability to see things out there that we haven't been able to see before. You know what's crazy? The universe is so big that the thing we use to measure the universe is a light year. Okay? Now think about this. I mean, I don't know about you, but like a mile, that's a pretty good distance. You know, I'm going to take a car trip. 500 miles is pretty good. You know, you're going to fly somewhere to another part of the world, you know, maybe a few thousand miles or whatever. That's pretty big. But a light year is how far light would travel in 1 year at the speed of light, which is 186,000 miles per second. How many seconds are there in a minute? So we're talking about 186,000 mile units every second. And there's 60 seconds in a minute. And there's 60 minutes in an hour and 24 hours in a day. 7 days in a week, 30 or so in a month, 365 in a year. I mean, that's crazy. That's a crazy distance. I mean, it's unfathomable. How do you think in those terms? And then we realize that the Milky Way galaxy, which is the galaxy that we're a part of, is like 52,850 light years across. And that's just nuts. And then we realize that there's estimated to be like 2 trillion galaxies in the observable universe. I mean, I don't know about you, but that's just like mind-numbing. I mean, brain hurts kind of stuff. Like that huge. And then we go back to where God reveals himself to us. We look at the book of Genesis and we see how he, with the power of his word, spoke, and the universe was created. This ginormous, beautiful, diverse universe was created in 6 days by the power of his word. Wow. Are you not just in awe of this God? Listen, we want to be a church. And I'd like to say we are, and we're getting better. Certainly haven't arrived. But we want to be a church that is about people who are living in awe of God, bringing other people into that awe so they can bring others into that awe, right? If you are not in awe of God, you're not seeing him right. if you see him correctly, if you see him as he reveals himself in Scripture, you can't help but fall down and just, wow. That's what we're about. And as the weeks go on, we're gonna look at the nuts and bolts of that. What would it look like if we were really people that were in awe of God, living in awe of God, and bringing others to live in the awe of God? What would it look like? I'm glad you asked. Stay tuned, okay? Next week, we'll get to that next core value.